Well, some things that have not been said yet about polynomial system solving. So
right.
I had to change the title after so many things. So well, first of all, I would like to really thank the organizers of this workshop for inviting me to give a conference here and to be here in general, because it's a real pleasure to be with so many friends, and it's really great in here. And I want to thank also the Fields Institute. At least we have some representatives here of the Fields Institute. Thank you very much also for holding this and, well, for the invitation and the office. Polynomial system solving is such a big thing, and so many people have worked there. So from the symbolic stuff and all these Grebner bases, the Buchberger algorithm, then this other symbolic main alternative to Grebner, which is this Kronecker algorithm by the Terra group with Luis Mipardo, and Marcus T. Verbank, and Jos Heinz, and their collaborators that Gregoire Lechev has presented and keeps on presenting during tomorrow. So, well, that's a lot of work done. But, of course, I'm not speaking about symbolic solvers, but about numerical solution to polynomial system solving. And, well, everybody must have, I guess, in the head what a homotopy method is, so I won't stop too much on that. Here we have Jean-Pierre's manifold, sometimes called the solution manifold too, which I know, I guess that everybody can imagine what it is by now. No? So here we have the space of systems, there we have the space of solutions, and this is the set, which we call V, the set of Fx, such that f of x equals 0. And then, well, the numerical number one method to solve polynomial systems is choose a path in the space of systems and approximate it after by some method. So, well, there is a lot of things to say about that. And maybe a good way to structure them is using the scheme suggested by Snail that has already been recalled by Felipe and Peter, which is something like first bound the complexity of some algorithm by some condition number, which I will just denote mu, and second the expected value of mu should yield some kind of expected value of the complexity. So I will try to say some things about these topics that have not been said yet, or to complete things that, well, that I think that can be pointed out slightly more than what they have already been pointed out. So, well, I will structure more or less the talk in these two topics, and I will speak about a bit about this. And then I will also present an implementation joint work with Anton Lakin here that shows some performance of the algorithm. So, well, let me start then by the first point. I insist, I only will say things that I think that have not been said yet. So you will find out of omissions in my speech, probably. So, well, got some words. Framework is the BSS model, so we assume computations are done exactly. The steps are usually done by a heuristical procedure in most existing software. So as far as I know, the most reliable and popular software for solving numerically via homotopy methods polynomial systems are due to T.Y. Lee and his team, some SBAM player collaborators like John Houston and Bates, and then we have some other implementation by Anton Lakin in the packet Macaulay, and Jean Berchel also has that. And so, well, all these packages, to choose the steps, the thing that they do a heuristical procedure, which is like a going very fast thing, which, correct me if I'm wrong, but essentially, among the many strategies, the more or less normal one is you would give a long step, you would check that things are not terrible, and then you continue, And if you give longer sticks for a while, then your next steps will be longer. And if you start to get into trouble, then you will just slow down and see what happens. So, well, let me just make a possible picture of things that may happen. So let's say that you have a polynomial S0 here, a polynomial S1 here. And so in this situation, but when we are a bit worse. So we have the first path of solutions is going like that. Second path of solutions is going like that. And then, so I want to compare what two distinct animals would do. I will represent by a turtle, an animal which goes very safe. And I will represent by a Canadian tiger, a one that goes very fast. So here is what I think that the Canadian tiger will do. He will start going like that, and he will make a step. He will see that the solution carry varies in that direction. He will make another step, and he will make another step, and make another step, and fastly arrive to a solution here. This other tiger here, of course, will do a similar thing and will arrive here. I don't say that this happens always, I just say that this can happen. For if you go very fast, there may be problems in the middle, but you just escape. Because there are no problems at the point where you are, there are no problems at the point where you arrive, but there might be problems in the middle, and you just don't notice. So well, of course you can imagine that what the turtle would do, she would follow a much slower strategy. But what she would do then, well, she would detect that something is happening in the middle, and if problems, just put the head inside and go much slowly, and then she will eventually arrive to the destiny here. So, well, if we put numbers and call this 1, 1, 2, 2, then we will have something like this will be the 2, this will be the 1, this will be the 2, and this will be the 1. So somehow the solutions have crossed if you use heuristics, which is something totally natural that may happen sometimes. And that, of course, one can say, who cares? Anyway, I got all the solutions. So, well, sometimes one just is interested in getting the solution which is, connected to the original solution that we have. One reason to have that, to want that, is that maybe you are computing some kind of monodromy. Or the reason to have that is that there are many interesting theoretical questions that you may want to study, and in order to study them, you need to be sure that the path that you're following is exactly the one that you are supposed to follow. So, well, of course, this will force you to go slower, but it has some advantages. So, well, this is doing like the turtle thing is what we will call somehow a certified homotopy, in contrast to the heuristic homotopy. Okay, so I will speak about certified homotopy. And well, of course, there is a history there. Certified homotopy, well, in general, the process will be the following. You are at some point T. You will choose some delta T. This will produce from ST, you have ST plus delta T. And then you have here an approximation at a certain point, and the new one, well, this, let me call it CK, then CK plus 1 will be the Newton method in the new system applied to the old solution. And this way you will go doing that. And the whole thing here is, of course, choosing the step. Okay. So, well, of course, this uses Newton's method and all the theory of Newton's method, essentially all this alpha and gamma theory that was born in the 20th century in the hand of Kantorovic and Kim Snail, later Shub in the projective version, then all these series of papers by Shub and Snail, the Bessut series, which we have spoken so much here those days, and then it has been extended in many directions, like in Jean-Pierre and Gregorio extended it for Riemannian manifolds. And then, it has been extended to many other things, underdetermined also, and singular, Jean-Pierre Schub, it has been so many extensions, so for sure that I forget someone, but that's it. Multimogenius, a lot of extensions. And then, with respect to certified homotopy methods, I also have to say that a lot of people have worked in that, And again, maybe it was born in the hands of Morgan, Hirsch's male team, that for the one-dimensional problem. Then in the many dimensions, Jean Renegar wrote a paper with homotopy for finding all the solutions, which indeed produces a complexity which is linear in the Bessel number. And I think that's the first time that one can approximate all the solutions of a system in linear time in Bessel number. And then, well, this series by Schuban-Smail, then Gregorio Malajovic noticed that one can make the Newton operator in many different ways, more stable, less stable, and made some descriptions on how this worked. And, well, so many things. And then Professor Luis Mipardo and myself, we worked on that, and I will explain that. And recently, Peter and Felipe had also worked on that, so many people. So once somebody told me that when you give a talk, you have to say names, write the names of a lot of very, very famous people. That way, if someone doesn't know you very well, maybe thinks that you are one of those guys. So, well, I am not Newton or his descendant. The other guys, you know them, so it's clear. So, well, then point one, bound complexity of the algorithm. So, well, many things have been said again. And the best result that we have nowadays is due to Mike, has already been recalled by Jean-Pierre. The complexity in terms of number of steps. So in this talk, number of steps and complexity will mean the same. Number of steps will be, bounded by a constant, small constant, times d to the 3/2, being the maximum of the degrees, times the integral between 0 and 1 of mu at the path, times s dot theta dot differential of t. And this, well, everybody can see that this is the length of the path ft theta t in the condition number, in the condition metric, obtained by multiplying the usual metric by mu. So if we could this, you would be speaking about the length of the path ft theta t. According to the usual formula, if you put this, then you're speaking about the condition of that path. So, well, there's something that has not been said yet about that, which is that this quantity depends strongly on one choice that we have made, which is the choice of the Bombieri whale metric, which is that product that we spoke about in HD, the space of systems. We spoke about a product which is unitary and variable. I won't recall the formula. I don't think it's necessary now. But we put this this Bombieri whale metric, which is an idea of Schuban-Smail. And, well, so this is strongly dependent on that choice, because the definition of mu depends on that. The norm of f dot depends on that. So it all depends on that. But here, this thing, this is completely independent. The number of steps that the algorithm takes. You don't see Schuban-Smail metric there. You don't see Bombieri whale. You don't see anything. That's absolute. That's a number. Just a number. So, well, for me, this means that the choice of Bombieri whale metric is a good choice.
Number of steps, there are two ways probably of seeing it. One is some sort of non-constructive, the best possible, but it's non-constructive.
I will speak about that in 1 minute.
And then if you have constructive, then it depends on the because it depends on the condition at hand.
I will speak about that in 1 minute. Okay, so the number of steps of some algorithm is bounded by that. I don't say the optimal number. The optimal number is, of course, bounded by this number. And it's smaller than that. But I want to point that out. I mean, that the Bombieri whale metric is not just one choice among 1 billion that you have made, but it is a metric that does proportion, does give you a complexity bound. So, well, this is a result by Shub in complexity of Bessel theorem 6. And one must say that it is, it's an existential result. So the result by Shub, strictly speaking, what it says is that there exists T0, T1, T2, blah, 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 until tk, which is equal to 1. So here you're following the homotopy, 0 to 1, you divide it, T0, T1, T2, T2. So there exists such a partition of the interval, which happens to be provide a certified homotopy method, so the Tartle method, which does go to the good point. So Tartle is good here, Tartle is not bad. And such that this number is bounded by this quantity. So, well, I must say it is not trivial to get a constructive version of that. But there exists such a constructive version, which, well, I essentially took the paper by Mike and worked a lot on it, computed many constants and many things, and I can say that there exists a constructive version, which is now a submitted paper, and, well, so I would say just that it is constructive. And then, well, coming back to the question by Felipe, yeah, the construction depends on the metric or whatever, but the complexity is just it. I mean, there is no extra dependence on the metric. Maybe your method depends on the metric, but at the end of the day, something that you care about, which is the number of seconds that it takes in the computer, is a completely objective quantity, which is independent of the metric. So I wanted just to point that out as a good point of that choice. So well, that is something. And then, for the moment, I don't say anything else about the first problem, about the first point. I will speak now about the second point, expected value of mu, and which should yield expected value of the complexity. So well, first thing that one notes, of course, this is bound. It's not exactly bound in the complexity by a condition number, but by the integral of a condition number. So we are not in a very trivial situation. It is not enough. It's not enough to say that the expectation of the condition number is smaller than or equal to little m big m d to the 3 halves, which, by the way, it is. It is not enough. One needs a bit more. And, well, what you may be needing is going to be more or less specified now. So, well, of course, now we have to go to a particular algorithm. Now we are going to bound the complexity of an algorithm, so we are going to go to a particular algorithm, and there are essentially, now, there are two algorithms whose complexity is understood. One of them is the random linear homotopy, which was done by myself and Mismi, and which is essentially the following thing. Well, it contains two results. The first one would be to say, this has already more or less been said, but let G, a polynomial system chosen at random, let theta be chosen at random from the zeros of G. Then the expected value of the complexity of following, well, I will say yes, of going from F, from G to F, starting at theta. So I hope that everybody can understand this intuitive notation, more or less. So the expected value of the complexity of going from here to here is smaller than or equal to little constant, little m, big m, d to the 3 halves. So more or less like the same as there. So, well, this, as Felipe pointed out, there is a cheating here. We are saying choose a random system, then choose a random solution. Of course, you can't do that. If you could do that, why would you be worrying about system polynomial solving? So, well, the second part is a result that says that, the random choice process is equivalent to another process which is not so hard to do. And this other process is the following. Choose a matrix M of size n times n plus 1, solve it, hence obtain a solution theta. This we can do, it's a linear system. At worst, we would have n cubed with Gaussian elimination, say. And then consider the homogenization of M to HD. So, well, this is a linear system. Now we have degrees. This is a linear system in certain unknowns. You homogenize them. I don't want to go very much into the details, but I can go now later if you want. And then add a random nonlinear part. So well, it happens that this process doesn't require you anything but solving a system, linear equations, and computing random numbers. And with these two things, you can emulate this apparently difficult process. So at the end of the day, what you can do is you do this process, then you follow your homotopy until the objective system, and actually what you have done is you have computed a random solution of your objective system, because the randomness in the origin is translated to the randomness in the end. So this process... Yes, right. So this is with this zero. Vanishing at theta for a system means a set of linear equations on its variables. So it is easy to choose things there because it's choosing things in a linear space. And well, it is programmed, so it is doable.
And it also shows them
a yes, yes. The nonlinear part is also chosen. This is also chosen at random. So you choose two things at random. This and this. You solve the first one. You choose this. You solve it. Then you choose this because you have to choose it restricted to a certain sort of space. And then you add them all. And then you have it. So, well, that is two results. And these two results together yield a method. No? You just choose at random with the system. You follow and you arrive somewhere and you have done it. And the average expected time is this thing. So, well, that is random linear. There is another one which is done by Peter and Felipe. I'm sorry, but saying the names and writing the surnames is not so easy at the same time. So well, they already spoke about it, so I just will mention it a bit. So what they say, what they prove, is that if you take this system, which has a group of solutions, which is pretty clear, it's just the roots of unity. So this is the usual system used in total degree homotopy by many, many usually, normally used polynomial systems. So if you do this, start here, then the expected value of the complexity is bounded by a little constant, little n, big n, d to the 3/2, and then little n to the power of d. Little n to the power of d is not a bad quantity. It is not linear in big n, but when d is small, then it is small. So this is a good complexity result, which you can translate, well, indeed, you can use this thing when d is smaller than n, and then with d is bigger than n, you can use the algorithm by Jim. And then so this thing, adding the algorithm by Jim, both things together produce an O log log, so double log n, big n log log n algorithm, which is, as Felipe and Peter said, is a very almost polynomial time. It's not polynomial, but it's almost polynomial. So that's the state of the art now, as far as I know, on the complexity estimates of this stuff. We have a random algorithm, randomized algorithm, say, or probabilistic algorithm, which produces this expected time. We have a non-randomized one, which produces this other expected time. And both of them are, well, doable. And just, you can just program them. So, well, yeah, you can just program them, which does not mean that it is easy to program them. But happily enough, I met that guy in Barcelona, and Anton Lakin, and he is working in a project called Macaulay, which is a software very much used in numerical algebra, geometry, and which uses, well, has implemented many symbolic algorithms, and which is much used by a community which is very interested in the certification of the results. So usually people from algebraic geometry would want explicit things which are not heuristical, but yet with theorems on convergence. And then, well, so he has implemented this stuff. And then he has implemented that algorithm with that complexity. And we have already obtained some results that I want to present here because I think that they can be interesting. Let me see that I don't forget something. Well, yeah, there's another thing that has not been said, so I will say it now, which I forgot before. In these all studies of the condition number expectation and so on, apparently, well, Peter said me yesterday, or Felipe told me that you told him, or something like that, that von Neumann was indeed the first person to do a condition number analysis with probability analysis in the 50s, which is something pretty amazing.
In the 51.
Goldstein and von Neumann. So, well, that's a spectacular, because the same guy that defined the condition number already tried to do that, so it's like he knew Smale's program on advance.
Exactly, like that. He begins the second paper with the numbering of the first. So mm-hmm. The first has something like 8 sections, he begins with section 9.
Yeah. So that's it, part 2. And then, well, after that, Smale in his Fundamental Theorem of Algebra paper, then he also studied this probability distribution of the condition number using the volume of tubes and the Weyl formula and so on. And then Jim noticed that really the varieties that you're dealing with are singular, and then you cannot use many of these machinery of Riemannian geometry, and then he invented a cute trick of moving a ball and measuring the intersection of the ball with the variety blah, blah, to get a formula for the tube which is valid for singular varieties. And then this was extended by Edelman to the case of any size matrices. And Denel. And then Edelman provided a very, very accurate formula, and then, well, many people work on that. So extending it to many other contexts, like smooth analysis, those guys, Spielman, Peng, and Donagan, and then Shebor, and, well, so a lot of studies are there. I just keep on saying a lot of names. Wait. For the moment, what I have said is just that if you are given a path FT and you are given a certain solution C sub 0, you will get to the final solution here. That is the only thing that I say. I didn't speak about several path following. But of course, if you are given... Sorry, well, let me answer your question. So if you are given a path and you are given two different solutions here, you can follow them until the end and you will get the two corresponding one in the end. If you look at the complexity of this method, at the formula, it contains the integral of mu times something. If you find some solution in the middle, which is singular, this means that mu is infinity, this means that the method will never finish. Hence, this is in general valid only for the case when you are in general position, say, in some sense, in the sense that all the solutions are non-singular, or that, well, there may be some singular solutions in other places, but you are following a good path. So it doesn't help you too much, for example, to count number of solutions. Well, that is what exists, you know. So hopefully there is still people who is interested in non-singular solutions too. Well, at least I can say with another big name, I would say Smale put that in his list of problems, so at least he is interested in that. Okay. So, well, let me just present a few results that I said that we obtained with Anton Lakin. When implementing this method and seeing what happens. So, well, one good thing when one implements this kind of method is that you really can possibly prove or check in practice theoretical results. A bad thing is that you have to pay a price, which is the price of the slowness. So, well, just as a very small glance, if you take four polynomial equations with degree 2, then on the average, this may take more or less 650 iterations, 650 steps. So well, I know that T.Y. Lee would like it to be 10,000, because this way he could be 10,000 faster. But even if you do this in only one step, you can, well, you can still be 600 times faster. Yeah, so the system that I am speaking about here is, the initial system will be x0 to the di minus 1, x1, x0 to the dn minus 1, xn, sorry, this is the 1. This has a solution 1, 0, 0. This is the initial system. The final system is chosen at random. You have picked a random system, and you throw the method. So, well, I need to specify several things here. First, well, this is the expected number of steps. First, this quantity is not known in the theory. We don't know the expected number of steps starting at this system. We really know it if we start at this system, which is not that one, or if we start at random systems, which is also not this case. Indeed, proving that this expected value is polynomial in the input size is a conjecture by Schuban and Smale, which is a very hard conjecture. And this seems to be hard, or the hardest system until now. So, well, here you have 650 is the average for that. And then, let me make a little plot. This is the number of unknowns, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And this expected value of the number of steps that we get is approximately something like, well, we see 650 is really 6, 3, 4, this thing, 1, 4, 5, 2. Yeah. Running the program 1,000 times, I think, for the expectation. Anton, was that correct? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's it. With floating point numbers. I must also say that... So I must say that when the step is smaller than 10 to the minus 6, so well, Anton considered reasonable that when you reach some step smaller than 1 million, the method just says, I don't know, because maybe there are floating point errors that are appearing there. So well, one should also say how many failures have been in here, and it oscillates from 3, 3, 12, 10, 22, of a total of 1,000. And well, these are still little percentage, I think. We have not made that many experiments because the thing is working since 4 days ago in its complete power, I think. Or maybe a bit more, but. Yeah, yeah, this is running. This is running. If this talk were tomorrow, I will tell you. So, well, let me give slightly more precise, by the way. How many time do you have still?
10 minutes.
10 minutes, okay. So let me give a more precise version of the conjecture of Schuban-Smale. The conjecture of Schuban-Smale is that this system, well, maybe you have to normalize it by these numbers, that this system has a total number expected, a total expected number of steps polynomial in the input size, essentially, well, something like that. Say O of n to the c, or n to the O of 1, or however you prefer to say that. Well, the original form of the conjecture is with probabilities, not with expectation, and it's not exactly that, but that is the modern form of the conjecture. Now we can give it a more explicit form, because we can more or less measure these numbers and compare it to some sensible quantity here. And then the one that I want to show is the following, which I find really interesting, which is that this experimental number of steps for the Schub and the Smale conjecture, so this is conjecture, and this is experimental, I want to compare it to the expected value of the complexity for random linear homotopy, which is a good way maybe to measure things. Compare it to the best bound that you have. So, well, this is something, this constant is computed to be 3500 more or less, or 3569 I think, times little n, big n, 2^3 in this case, because we are with degree 2. So, well, how does this to this compare? It is a pretty interesting formula, I think, because this is extremely similar to the square root of that divided by 2. And this formula seems to hold for these numbers, also for 9, which is another experiment that we've done. So that's funny, I think. And it gives an idea of the kind of complexity that one should expect starting there. No, sorry, these are the number of failures on each of these. Yeah, well, we went up to 8. We have had no more time to do experiments for the moment. But it really looks like that. So,
can you say something about the variance of
this thing? Yes. Yes, indeed. About the variance, well, the variance of this, we also computed it, and it comes to be more or less like the square of the expectation. The experimental variance is more or less like the expected value squared. So it is not a very good value of the variance, but it is still polynomial. And I must say that for the random linear homotopy, we do have a theoretical bound for the variance that was joint work with Shub, that not only the expected value is polynomial, but the variance is smaller than little n squared, big n squared, b to the 3, so the square of that, times the logarithm of the Bessel number. That is the bound that we have. So what we come to say is that the variance is essentially the square of the expectation. This is not a great situation, but it's a very good situation if you think that the variance could very easily be infinity. And indeed, here the variance is more or less like the square of the expectation, so maybe we did a good job. Well, but these values, you know, these values, we take them when the step is smaller than 10 to the minus 6. Experimentally, failures happen, but in the theory, failures are zero probability, for you will almost never hit the singular systems. So, well, I give the data like that with the number of failures so that you can make your mind out of what this means. Well, we do know something about the tail. Well, recall that for this expectation, we don't have a theoretical result. So yes, we don't know the tail. This is purely experimental. But for example, if you do this experiment, we do have the variance, so we do have a tail somehow. So well, you can trust that these numbers would not make this quantity explode. But of course, I insist, for the random homotopy, for this one, this is all conjectural. But really looks like true. Yes, this is linear homotopy. Everything here is linear homotopy. So well, you fix the starting point, this one? Oh, yeah. Yeah, just double precision, not multiple precision. But well, I insist, the good point, this a part of the bad numbers, the good point is that you really do get to the root that you have to go, that you have this certification. Is just the point that I want to emphasize. So, well, let me tell you another experiment that we have also made, which is another thing which is not still known, but that I think that might be the first thing that will be proven after seeing it work in the real life in this context, which is the following. Let me call G in order to the Shub and Snell pair. So, d1 to the 1/2, dn to the 1/2, x0, d1 minus 1, x1, x0, dn minus 1, xn, with root 1, 0, 0. What does this condition, what does this thing have of special? I can tell you this is the minimum condition number. The condition number is at least square root of little n, if I remember well. This is where it is obtained. So, well, one could think, what happens if I take g in R I generate randomly a unitary matrix. This is unitary. And, well, a unitary change of coordinates generated randomly somehow. And then I do linear homotopy from this system. Linear homotopy to some fixed F. Okay? So that's something that I can do. I can wonder what happens with this. And, well, you have F. F has a number of zeros. Each of these systems will go to 1, 0, or to 2, or to 3, or how many. And you can wonder, will I get, what is the probability of the zeros? Will some zero be preferred to another? But I think it's a good question. So, well, we made the following experiment. Well, the experiment here. And let me tell you what the result of the experiment is. So, well, here, let me introduce very briefly, just 1 minute, a notion which will help. So, it is not so clear how to measure if certain quantities are equidistributed. No, at first sight, it is not a trivial thing to define it, but there is a very good definition, which is called Shannon's entropy. Which says the following, you have an algorithm which has a random part and can produce several outputs. So say that can produce x1, x2, to xl. And let pi be the probability of reaching xi. Okay? So well, the entropy is defined as minus the log of pi log pi. The entropy of an algorithm is maximal if all the solutions are equidistributed. And you can see this very easily in the formula, just substituting p sub I by 1 over n. So this is always smaller than or equal to log l and equal if equidistribution. So, well, we made that experiment, and we measured the Shannon entropy of the thing. What is the maximum? We tried it with m equals 3 and degree 2. So the maximum is the logarithm in base 2, say, of the number of possible solutions with the result number, which is 2 to the power of 3. That is 3. So if you have an algorithm which produces them with equal distribution, the entropy will be 3. The experimental entropy that we get, do you see if I write it here? So the experimental entropy is 2.9994. So what do you think of this? I mean, it's clear that you have equidistribution. And this is somehow an unexpected result, I think, or maybe expected by some, I don't know. It's the kind of result that, I mean, for people used to think on that questions, you will say, do you think that this will produce a distribution? And maybe someone will tell you, yes, of course, and the other guy, no, why? So, it happens that yes. And, yeah?
The experiments are made on what? Do you change the unitary transformation?
Right.
Do you change the experiment?
No, F is fixed. But we have done this for many different tests. You fix F, and you choose a lot of unitary rotations, you check. You fix another F, you choose a lot of unitary rotations, you check.
And you have the same number?
Well, the same. This is the average of them or something like that, you know. Don't ask me more precision. I mean, it's like 2999 something. So, well, one would probably expect that, for example, if you have a system that has a very well-conditioned solution and very bad one, you would go more often to the very good-conditioned one, because it has a bigger Newton attraction basis. Truth is not, because we have tried that in systems which are exactly that. A very good condition solution and extremely ill-conditioned ones. And still, you get all of the roots with this procedure. So, well, I know that Mike already, and I don't know if Luismi or somebody else, have talked about this question, and they probably have kind of an idea of how this can be. But I at least think that, well, this, I think, proves that using this kind of method can be good to see things and see if you can later prove them. If it is false here, doesn't maybe deserve the effort to try that. So, well, Macaulay, as I say, is something that you can download from the internet. It is free, it's open source, and so on. And then probably in some time when this is completely developed, I hope that this can be public in not in some future. Anton will say with more precision. Oh. But it will not contain the certified procedure, no? It will? Good.
It will contain this low version. It will contain this pilot version of the certified model.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I should note that it's soft certification because we still use floating point number. And if we want to do hard certification, we need to do interval version.
It's not so trivial to bound, but it can be done.
You don't, because as a theory you already provide all the bounds.
Yeah, but floating point can always give you a bad surprise.
Yes, that would guarantee that your round of errors not confused.
Yes, you can. Floating point has a feature that you can always, if you write carefully the program, you may always...
Okay, Gregorio, we won't that go into that discussion now. For there will be a fight, probably. Okay, so I want to finish just with 30 seconds more. And I want to say something that has not been said yet, at least in this language, has not been said yet. So this is how you write it, and this is how it sounds. Sengil Chuka Amida, Jean-Pierre. Thanks to my young team for the Korean version. Thank you.
Somehow
Yeah, I agree. So what's the question that they made in the 94? You know, we're still waiting.
Yeah.
Well, it is also implemented the total degree homotopy, and I just didn't present the results because they are still running now. Because we made this first, maybe, or something, but they will be available. Yeah, sure, go ahead. Yeah, but you can follow any path that you can imagine. Not only linear paths, you just need it to be C1 plus leap or something like that. So, yeah. And you can follow two routes or 100 routes of the same system. Just you can do whatever you want.
Maybe another comment. You mentioned the paper by Mike. If you fix, then you
it is not truncated, then you have an implementation. We have an algorithm to implement it. Philippe and I also have derived.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
It's okay. No problem. We call it ALH, adaptive linear homotopy. So, but I just wonder how much is different. And I would like to see in our algorithm what we get. I mean, what is the difference? Is there a big difference?
There is a difference between your algorithm and the one that I made constructed. Yeah, I can tell you. So the complexity of the algorithm, according to Mike's paper, is the integral of mu times f dot theta dot. And this is the complexity of the algorithm that I made following his paper. The complexity of your algorithm is the integral between 0 and 1 of mu squared. This is bigger than that, in general. And it is not related to a metric, so... So, there, of course, are multiplicative constants and so on. My here is 71. I don't know which one you got.
You have a definite set size, no?
Yeah. So I can tell you how. So, let me make a little lie now. Little lie is that the step is the following. Well, I will use intuitive terminology, okay? Fk is the system that you are in, theta k is the approximation, the Greek letter is the exact root. So, well, the step that you take is essentially this one with a squared, and then the d to the 3 halves, whatever. Okay? Now, let me point out what is the value of theta dot. This is what has been called here the Davidchenko equation. I didn't know that name, but it is the derivative of f at theta inverse times theta, essentially. Okay? So what I put here is essentially mu times norm of f dot squared. This will be 2 to the 1/2. So I am trying to put exactly this quantity. But now theta dot, I don't have it because I only have the approximation dot, so I put this quantity. The norm of df at theta k inverse theta k. Yes, I am less pessimistic, and I prove that this can be done this way. But it is not trivial to prove it, because indeed you have to add another hypothesis. So the theorem of Mike is for any C1 curve, and this is for any C1 plus leap curve. So the fact that it's plus leap, I think that shows that it is not trivial. You have to. And I know that John Halstein and Mike, I don't know if you're working in another way to approach to a constructive algorithm, and I don't know if you will finally have to add another hypothesis, probably not C1 plus leap, but something other, but similar, I don't know. So it looks like the constructive version of the C1 version might be more difficult, or might be very difficult, I don't know. But at least this one, which is valid for all the curves that you would imagine in principle, who would imagine a C1 not C1 plus leap curve? No. Like the derivative is the Cantor function, why would you follow that homotopy? So in general, I mean, this works for almost everything that you want. That's it.
Okay, thank you.